Blog Talk Radio.
Last fight, which was just 154.
Control the fight. Hindsight's 20/20, we don't know. What we do know was with Bernard Hopkins in last night, and it was a workmanlike performance. A friend of mine, she was there. I was going to go, but he said, I just got back from vacation almost at 2 o'clock yesterday. And I do unpacking, showering, driving, an hour commute down Broad Street, Philadelphia, during rush hour, during the pouring rain, because I just couldn't do it. You know, me and my best friend each other were like, yeah, this is not going to happen. Just watch it on TV. And Bernard wasn't great, but he was good enough. For an almost 35-year-old man, not bad. Cornell was very tough fighter. Gave the fight, but he just didn't have the pedigree to keep up with a guy that's so cranky and so smart and so slick in there like Hopkins.
He seemed to be a lot physically smaller.
Well, Cornell, for most of his career, middleweight, but he looked, pretty filled out at 173 pounds.
Compared to Hopkins, he just looked very small.
Well, when Hopkins was 160 pounds in middleweight, he was a very physical fighter. I remember when he was going to fight William Joffe in 2003, and I met them both that year. I met Joffe actually at a Hopkins fight in Philadelphia. And then I had met Hopkins several times. And you would have never believed those guys weighed 160 pounds. Hopkins looked at that 2 weight class as bigger than Joffe. He's just a big. He reminded me of a fighter from the Naval Academy, Todd Alexander, who was a 4-time national champ. Todd Alexander, who fought mostly at 156 or 165, looked bigger than most heavyweights. They have a picture of him in the one Navy program that came out, and he's standing next to the 190 pounder, and you would bet money that Alexander was the bigger guy. Certain guys can have that advantage. It's like they get on the scale, they look like they're like 250 pounds, they get on the scale and they're like 190. So the guy like me, it's like everybody's just saying, oh man, he goes, and the funny thing, I can't believe you're fighting at 180 or 185 or 190. You look like you're, 165, and I'm like, well, 156, I'm like, well, God has made me heavier than I look.
Yeah, well, speaking of heaviness, today I just got my sauna suit, and yesterday, the day before, I got a hospital-sized scale with, like, the tabs on it where you can put, like, your target weight, your actual weight. After workout, whatever you want to do, you have like 6 different options on the scale. And I got the suit free of charge from the guys at the MMA store I have advertised on the software. And so now I'm going to have to do a video called No Excuses. I have no excuses now not to get down to 175. That's my target weight. And I'm about 190. Right now, they even give you, with the suit, they give you what's called Real Sauna Cream. And it says that it's scientifically formulated to be used with the suit and helps reduce water weight gain through perspiration.
It just comes right back on. And I used to argue with people at the local fitness center out there, too, because they would always have it there about, 65 or 70 degrees, and it wasn't hot enough for me. And one of those, what do you want to spray this night? I'm like, as soon as you drink less water, it comes right back on. I said, listen, the body's natural energy burning system. No matter what the body does, you're burning energy. I said that to produce sweat, it takes energy for your body to get those glands to produce sweat to naturally cool down. So what happens is, just what the body's doing, they produce that sweat, it's burning energy, you're burning more calories. And they're like, well, yeah, you make a good point. I'm like, well, and I'm like, why don't you put the fucking air conditioner on? People don't want to sweat, and I'm like, you're idiots. You don't know how controversial I am.
Most people probably don't even realize. I didn't even realize it for years until some reason that heat, you know, raises the level of water in your body, or something happens where it is associated with weight. There's some connection, but it starts with heat. And that really blew my mind when I first found out, because I was like, oh, how is that possible? But that's why, you know, it takes a sweat to lose calories, burn calories, they say. You know, it takes a certain amount of exercise. And that's where this expression, burn calories, comes from.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Before we get to our agenda, there's a few things that you just want to mention. We have a fat situation this weekend with our Thanksgiving holiday. But sad situation that happened in Philadelphia recently was the Friday before Thanksgiving, which kind of makes it even harder because the fighter that lost his life was a family man. He had one or two young children. I think it was two daughters, but he had at least one. Francisco Rodriguez came in from Chicago. Featherweight, he was fighting a young prospect out of Philadelphia, Tion Kennedy. I don't know Tion well personally, but I've talked to him at the fights. I've covered a couple of his fights. Good young prospect, and I feel really sorry for him also. It was a good give and take fight. I wasn't there, and I didn't get out live duration for either vacation. But what happened was, you know, just the two guys just kind of went at it, and they said, like, during the course of the fight, they could see Rodriguez really starting to phase a little bit. And Kennedy really brought it to him in the ninth and tenth round. He knocked him down. He got him in the corner and hit him with a few shots. The referee stopped the fight. He said it was a good stoppage. You know, he didn't let him take excessive punishment. He stopped the fight. And then Jackson actually got out of the ring and was on his way back in the dressing room when Rodriguez collapsed. And he passed away a few days later. It was on Sunday night. And it's a sad, sad situation. And I feel really bad for Tion because, you know, I've seen that the great group of Mancini, Gabriel Ruelas, and Joe Griffith that never recovered, you know, from that, from the death of an opponent. And it makes me think of something else, Rich, and I'm going to throw this out to you also. You don't see a lot of fatalities in the heavyweight division. And people are always like, we're the biggest punchers. I don't understand why. And the two theories I have, and I've actually read some articles by Dr. Margaret Goodman, who's a Wells Douglas physician, she writes for Ring Magazine. But what you'll see a lot of times is two prevalent points. A fighter that is really exhaustively tired because they're trying so hard to gasp for air to get the oxygen back in their lungs. That air isn't going to the muscles, but that oxygen is not getting to the brain, making the brain susceptible to injury. And then the other one is the fighters are trying to make weight because they weaken their body, they weaken their immune system, they weaken everything so much trying to make the weight that they've not properly recovered when they're in that ring. And once again, they're more likely to suffer an injury.
proud. And we'll see what happens. But yeah, that was an interesting sideline to that. And it's all about, you know, the idea of, you know, when it's your time to go, it's your time to go. Rocky Marciano is famous for always saying, you know, when it's your time, it's your turn. And, you know, you never like to see it happen, but, you know, I'm always a big believer that everything happens for a reason. Apparently, this was his reason. I gave life to a whole bunch of other people that had a quality life without his help. So, I guess that's a good aspect of it. Stop everything in its tracks. You know, he had a very promising career going for him. You know, the only good consolation, I guess, is he died doing what he loved. So,
well, that was the positive. I mean, it's a sad situation, but I mean, like you said, seven people got a chance of life because he was, you know, gracious enough to do this work, you know, to be God rest his soul. He had an HBO, I'll try to fight this weekend, two of them. The first fight between Marius Angel and Juan Guzman. Everybody, including myself, thought Fumaga deserved that decision. He's a free major, he's a 6'7", 126 pounder. And he really, I mean, Guzman looked great at the beginning, but Fumaga really took it to him. And that was called the draw. And the main event was one of my dad's favorite fighters, Torado Andrade. Actually, the brother of Enrique Arenales, he fought when that happened last night.
Wow.
And he was fighting a rematch with Yusuf Yuta after a controversial fight last year.
Was it even more controversial?
Was the fight that last year?
Was this one even more controversial, or was that the Fanica one? I know one of those.
That was the Fanica one.
Oh, okay.
That was a controversial draw. The Yuta fight, no controversy at all, you know. He caught Andrade coming in the whole time. He scored a left hand. He knocked him down, flash knocked him down. And he got up and he missed the fight again. And he saved just a tremendous left hook to the liver and put Andrade down for the count. There's nothing he could do with that one. So my dad was pissed because Andrade is one of his favorite fighters. But, you know, he said, hey, you can't discredit me. He said, oh, you just do what he has to do. And now with Roy Jones out of the picture, they're trying to take the lift to what Hopkins going to do now. Chad Dawson called him out. Yusuf Yuta has been mentioned. And Hopkins has been talking about maybe moving up to heavyweight to fight David Haye. And Haye's got a mandatory challenge with John Ruiz.
Yeah, so Mr. John Ruiz sent us pictures of himself in his game room smoking a cigar.
Oh my God, don't mind me, man. Rich, come on. How horrible.
That was the worst PR move I ever saw. It was like, Ruiz living in the lap of luxury.
That's the thing I'm going to do. John Ruiz. Does John Ruiz seem to be a real nice guy? Everybody hates him. People hate him. Funny fans hate him because of his boring style. You know, he's just so
great.
First of all, always glitching. But then also, a lot of other people hate him. And I don't think he's even with Norman Stone anymore. Because Norman Stone was such an asshole. People hate John Ruiz.
He's hilarious to watch.
Oh, yeah. No, he's hysterical. One time during the build-up, when Rory Jones is fighting John Ruiz, Norman Stone and Jones' trainer, Alvin Murkerson, got into an altercation, and Murkerson knocked Stone out cold. And even in the ring magazines, like, normally when there's a man unconscious and needing medical attention, we don't find humor in it, and this is Norman Stone. So this is absolutely hilarious. And the only bad thing was the fact that his shirt came up a little bit, showing the physique resembling Butterbean.
Well,
just caught me. I'm still on the
side. They give him reasons for not liking him. And that's because his lawyer slash manager, you ever hear of Anthony Cardinale? He's a, he's a famous attorney in Boston, only because he's represented mostly mob officials, you know, head poncho, you know, connected guys. He's a mob lawyer, so, you know. You have to translate that John Ruiz is a mob fighter. There's no place for that in boxing anymore. You know, knowingly flaunting around his manager who's a mob lawyer. You know, people put two and two together. It's not hard. So this is their horse. And, you know, you never know how far they'll go to rig a fight if that's true. You know, they are using pawn in the boxing world.
Right. I mean, you know,
that was
a good point.
You can give it a hot shot before the like another resource we can even stuff it down or something. But anyway, that's that for genre release. We spent too much time talking about it. We have Sean Porter coming up in just a minute. We're going to give him a call. But before we do, I just wanted to do a quick rundown of the Ultimate Fighter and UFC fights at UFC 106 2 weeks ago. And also, the other big news of mixed martial arts the last few days is that my state finally regulated mixed martial arts. A few months short of Philadelphia, but we did it. We have regulated the MMA. Now they're talking about a big UFC fight in Boston Garden, the Fleet Center there, or Fenway Park, which
Wow.
There's also big talk of, before we end the boxing discussion, I forgot to mention this, big talk of the Floyd Mayweather Manny Pacquiao fight. Definitely going to happen. Bob Arum is actually over in the Philippines right now as we speak, hammering out the details, but rumors that have been slipping out have included suggestions that it might be held at Cowboy Stadium.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
$1.5 million, why not?
Right. Not a bad idea. Just UFC and Fenway might do that. In the UFC 106, we had a very good fight in the main event. All the fights in the part of the main event. Just going to talk about the main event quickly. Forrest Griffin and Tito Ortiz. Tito Ortiz looked good early, but Forrest is just a more well-rounded fighter. He's fresh, you know, he's not off the shelf like Tito has been. Tito obviously was banged up in training. It's kind of reminded me of the Frank Mir versus Brock Lesnar fight, because in that fight, Mir comes in with a bandaged knee in his head, with a big old hematoma on his forehead. And in this fight, Tito comes in with a black eye already from his training incident, I suppose. I don't know if he's in a cracked skull in the fight. He had limited wrestling success, a few good round-of-pound minutes going on, but Horace weathered the storm early, and he had a boxing round in the third round that Stewart would probably have done. And I think he threw a few too many head kicks for show, but he threw some hands that Stewart believed, and he just totally controlled the third round on the feet. Just tagged him with lefts and rights the whole time, bloodied him up good, and left no doubt, I think, even though the cards were a little bit sketchy, so I just scored a little weird. He gave him a split decision, but, you know, Forrest definitely proved himself, and then also we had the Ultimate Fighter last show on this past Wednesday, last night. That was pretty interesting. Kimbo refused to fight, even though it turned out they were going to need him to fight. We asked him if he wanted to go, and he said, you know, to be honest, I'm lost right now, I'm at about 40%. And they had an episode where they talked about Kimbo's knee. He has quite the right, he said his knee. In this episode, they go even more into detail. And it's almost like they're trying to tell everybody out there that if Kimbo is in UFC, don't pick him up because he's damn skilled. So he has no other choice but to stay in the UFC. But apparently it's going to be better for this Saturday, this weekend. He's going to be fighting Houston Alexander, they say. They finally announced it at the end of the show. And I think the timing of that is kind of, it kind of hurts the UFC in a lot of ways. They waited so long. I mean, they released it earlier. Somehow, when it got out, that he was fighting Houston Alexander a long time ago. But, you know, these other fights that they had to wait until the episode aired to promote, and then the event is this weekend. It only gives them like 6 days to promote the official matchup, so I don't really like that aspect of it, but, you know, it's been a long time since the taping of the show has been over, and, you know, the timing of all that is choreographed for a certain reason, I guess, but to make a long story short, the final matchups were decided on the show. It was a pretty interesting show. It was actually, you know, I had mentioned about the previous shows how they like to destroy the house. Actually, no house destruction in this episode. but there was an altercation in the last episode. So that was pretty funny. This one kid just, you know, took a lot of punishment. People were riding about different things. And it was easy to pick on. This kid went to a big beat in the semifinals. James McSweeney was, you know, really riding the kid hard. And so at one point they locked the kid in the bathroom. But I guess the bathroom was set up so that if you pulled out some drawers in the room next door and you tried to open the bathroom, the door opened out so you hit the drawer. So they set it up there, and I guess the kid was really claustrophobic, so he slipped out and it was, like, broke all the drawers off. So he comes out raging and he starts throwing punches at McSweeney. And he even threw a leg kick, like, an MMA fight. You know, they went toe-to-toe for like a good 30 seconds. Then McSweeney came back and just tagged him with a couple of good shots and then came in and put him in like a really hard guillotine. And, you know, choked him out really good and made him, you know, to basically give up. And it was very entertaining. It was probably the best drama of the season. You there, Tony?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to it.
Oh, all right. It was somebody else. When that click happens, I always think you hang up because I guess somebody was trying to call. Anyway, to continue. So that, you know, this little fight goes down, and the only other thing close to house destruction was when this kid jumped into the pool with one of the chairs, but, you know, that's no big deal. I guess they really wanted their security deposit back on this house. It was a nice house, you see, so I can understand why. Plus, there's the fact that one of their old Ultimate Fighter alumni is still suing them over some damage that happened in James' physique on the show. Around. So that has a lot to do with it. I just thought that was interesting. There was no real, you know, punching walls and walls or anything like that this time around. But, you know, they were the kid that McSweeney tagged him up real good and was actually probably affected a little too much by that when he went into his fight because he lost his fight, the next fight after that. And it did seem like he exerted, like, a lot of energy and all his adrenaline to you know, close that session. That was like an unwritten thing in the script. That was not in the script. That wasn't in, you know, a real-world episode script moment. That was real. So it was kind of unfortunate, the timing of it. But he was actually proud of the other kid for sticking up for himself finally. Because the day before that, the night before, the kid had asked him to write something on his head because he wanted to get a tattoo or something of his name. So his last name is like Linderman or something. Whatever he wanted on his head was Linderman. He asked the kid to write it on his head because he trusts him. And he writes it with the kid. He's like so pissed. But he was at the same time giving the guy props for doing it. It was weird. But that was really the best part of the show other than the fights. In the fights, we had Big Country Roy Nelson doing the same thing he did to Kimbo. To his competition was Matt Mitrione. Matt Mitrione got beat in the first fights. He's the guy they call Meathead. And that was pretty funny because he was, you know, creating a lot of drama whether he was going to fight or not. And they asked Kimbo if he was going to fight, if he wanted to fight, and he said no, because he didn't want to take the loss. So now he's going to be fighting Houston Alexander at the show. But he wasn't ready at that time, as he was bothering him all. And so they set that up. Mitrione lost. Titties. The guy they call Titties. He lost. And then they had Big Country Roy Nelson. Oh, he beat up McSweeney right after that session. The informal fight that he had in the house. Put McSweeney in the crucifix and hit him about 8 shots in the head, and it was over. And then Brendan Schaub, who was a former NFL player, fought another former NFL player, Marcus Jones. And I tell you, there's a lot of NFL guys talking about coming to boxing, like Chad Ochocinco there. There's already a lot of them going over to MMA. The oldest one being Herschel Walker. We haven't seen him yet, but he's coming.
Yeah. Herschel Walker, his autograph I got once, thanks too.
Yeah, so these guys, the two finalists in the Ultimate Fighter and the former NFL players, even Meathead, he was a former Marcus Jones is funny because he's like, you know, everybody would say, he said on the episode he's the nicest guy you ever meet. And then, you know, he gets engaged and he started off very strong and then he just kind of got caught on his feet and he got covered in a big right hand and he fell right on his back hard and the other kid just jumped on top of him and put it to him. But it was a very interesting finale. It was 2 hours long, a lot of fights. And probably the most interesting one was that last one with Brendan Shaw versus Marcus Jones. Both guys are just animals. I can't wait to see them in the UFC. I don't think the rest of the class is very good, but those two guys are great. We'll see more of them. I guess Pete Dimitrione is lined up to fight Marcus Jones. And that's actually like a revenge fight because he wanted to fight Mitrione in the gym. Another unscripted moment because Mitrione's last fight ended with the other guy now he had to get that laser surgery. And he was telling everybody in the house that he might never fight again. Marcus had developed this good friendship with him. So he came to the gym and they told him on the bus. And he just, kind of got all heated on the bus and he comes to the gym and he goes, like, literally forehead to forehead with Mitrione. Give me an excuse to beat you down right now. So they had a couple dramatic moments. They separated them and then settled them down. Now they're actually giving him a formal opportunity to fight him on the card. So this is a pre-fight to Kimbo versus Stan Zander. Brendan Shaw is fighting in the finale versus Big Country Roy Nelson. That's going to be a great fight. Big Country, everybody kind of expects to win, but it's going to be nice to see somebody that can actually push him and not let him get that freaking crucifix on there. And just laying on top of him, hitting him. But anyway, we'll see what happens. And then the third fight there, like I just mentioned, is going to be Mitrione versus Jones. So that is that, and let's...
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Why?
Oh, that's tough.
What about that automated chip with rooms you did?
Yeah, I know. What the hell?
Goodbye.
Sounds like the Garmin did. No, that's actually the wrong number. You ever seen that commercial for that Jared jewelry store where the lady won't give him directions? he didn't buy her a necklace out of the store, and then the computer is talking to the guy, and he just bought his girlfriend a necklace, so the supposedly sexy freaking car voice is telling him off. That actually was not the right number. That was the reason why I didn't skip it this earlier. Matkinovsky gave me for our number.
Go figure.
Oh, that's Matkinovsky.
Hit him. Good guy. He's doing a lot of work for these young companies. What the heck, how much did they?
Hello.
Hey, Sean, how's it going?
No, this is his dad. How are you?
Oh, this is dad. Oh, all right. Well, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich, and you're live on the Fight News Unlimited radio show. How's it going?
Oh, everything is great. You just got to sparring and just put in about 8 rounds of sparring and 4 more rounds on the bench. So he's in excellent shape and ready to go.
Alright. We got a boxing expert on the line here too, Tony.
Oh, who's the boxing expert?
Not really. I'm not sure I know Rich calls me the boxing rain man. Apparently, I know too much about the sport. The first thing I said to him when we got up here tonight was I pulled up the Sean's record. And I said, oh, he fought Jerome Ellis a couple weeks ago, stopped him in the fourth round. And that's pretty impressive. I saw Jerome Ellis fighting Philadelphia back in May, and he scored an upset win over a local prospect. I said, he looked pretty good. And Rich is like, oh, maybe he did too much.
Yeah, I'm not guy. But, you know, if you've ever heard the term, pressure will bust a pipe.
Yep.
Well, Jean kept pressuring him until the pipes burst.
That's pretty much how that went. And you know what? That's a good point, because when I saw him fight back, I believe it was May, he fought in Philadelphia. And he fought a very talented prospect named Jamal Davis. And Jamal didn't pressure him. He let Jerome for, several of the rounds control the pace. And he let him win the decision. And that was things like, Jamal would have done more. He had a chance to win that fight. He was obviously the favorite coming in, and he got spoiled. So it's one of those guys, you got to go in there, and you got to take it to him and break him down.
I think this guy had every intention of upsetting us also. And he was very determined to do so, and he was very confident. But, the pressure began to mount, and it could just be the outcome that we were looking for.
So I'm still battling the chest infection here, so I might cough once. You can cough during the course of the interview. But the main thing that Rich and I wanted to discuss was Sean's preparation with Manny Pacquiao for the Miguel Hooker thing.
Let me put you on the line with Sean, because he can tell you, because he was right there with Danny taking punches and delivering the blows.
Okay.
I'm on the line with Sean, and he can tell you what you need to know about that.
All right, sounds good. Just one second.
Admire it and enjoy it and try to compete with it.
And like I said, I was just thrilled to be in the ring with them, especially near the end of camp. I got to go more rounds with them, and I got to push them, and, you know, and all that good stuff. So it was a pleasure.
Now, were you the heaviest guy in camp, or was there anybody above your weight
range? No, I was the heaviest guy in camp, and I was the chief. I was always the first one to corner ring with them, and I was always the one to do the most rounds with them. So, we worked good together, and I'm looking forward to hopefully going
meet
again.
Now, what got you that opportunity in the first place? How did you get hooked up with that?
We went out to the Wild Card Boxing Club in L.A., and basically when we went out there, we just went out to train in the warm weather. It started getting cold back here in Ohio, and I had to make it to Freddy. And Freddie really liked what he saw me in the gym. When he pulled me aside one day, he said, "Hey, we're definitely going to take you to a camp with us." And I couldn't believe it. I thought it was unbelievable. And that's what got it all started. From the pain screen, too.
So you must have had a few moments where you actually, hate manning the business a few times, right?
Come from anywhere and everywhere. That uppercut that he dropped, even though it was in the fourth round, play the punch. You can't defend against that because that's not what your line of sight is used to seeing. And you would know that, you know, being there with conventional fighters, you know generally pretty well to see where the punches are coming from, and that's not where it has come from.
Now, we want to
you have to devote some of the time to show up early to play there also. So, you know, you're 11-4, 9 knockouts, and fight lined up December 18th in Hinckley, Minnesota, and they haven't announced an opponent yet. And then after that, we're looking at February 19th against Damian Friars in Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So, what feedback do you have on that?
This fight coming up is pretty big for me. It's, I'm going to do the co-main event on Showtime, and I'm just looking to be spectacular that night and just have a wonderful evening. And hopefully just, you know, display my skills the best that I can and, you know, allow everyone to see all the hype that was brought up throughout the Tank Man camp. And then from there, I'll move back, you know, back home here and do a hometown show, Ten-Round Fight on ESPN in Cleveland. So I think that's going to be really fun. I'm excited about that, too.
Yeah, well, because obviously we don't have an opponent lined up for December 18th yet. I'm looking at your opponents you're going to be fighting in February, Damian Friars, and Southpaw out of Miami. So obviously work with Pacquiao is obviously going to help you there. And, the one foot you mentioned is going to be on the show box. That'd be awesome, because, I mean, that's a night that I shouldn't be working, so I'd hopefully be able to tune into that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's, I'm so excited about being on Showtime, especially when I go by the name Showtime Sean Porter, so.
Yeah, that's kind of nasty, isn't it?
You're going to be the token show box fight.
Rich thinks your nickname should be the potato. She goes, that means
And she goes, I said, the potato, the person that beats her opponents into submission by, you know, by repeatedly slamming their fists with her face until they can't take it no more. And I said, you've got folks horrible, it's me. I'm like, well, I said, we actually came up with it. She's called the Capital of Harleyville. I said, we're going to call you, because the other thing also starts with an H. So I said, you're going to be the Harleyville Hammer.
That's a nice name, better than the first, huh?
But, yeah. The tater part of it, the whole running joke, it's going to be so mad that it's even going to curse Rich out, even though he had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, Tony likes
throwing
me off the bus.
Such early fun of the
girls,
you know.
Well, I think you're throwing everybody. I had a college boxing coach. He's from Lock Haven, Pennsylvania, which is the center of the state between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. And he's well known, Dr. Ken Cox. Funny guy. And his thing was like, he would get to him and he would just bust your stomach so bad. And if you couldn't take like a joke, you were screwed. I mean, there were some days he got on my shit seriously, and I'd be pissed off. But there were some days he would just come in and just bust my stone, so I'm like, you want me to walk out because you can't take no more. I said, you know what? Just toughen me up.
Uh-huh.
And, you can talk funny sometimes. Like, we got Benny on here. Look at him. I mean, he's got a shooting beat. You're going to make 172 this year? You're never going to make 172 because you eat too much. And he's like, how do you expect you're at the bar again? And he's like, yelling at me. I'm like, but I wasn't at the bar. I said, well, that's it for dinner. I had, like, a salad and, you know, a small, like, thing of, like, rice or whatever. He's like, you probably had two hamburgers and a pizza. He's like, you're not training. I'm like, what, you ran 4 miles? So he's like, no, you didn't. You had to post it.
So, Sean, now, what's your training crew like?
My training crew?
Yeah, do you have one?
We're out there tomorrow. We'll be out there. I'm going to the fight. Training out there at the wild cards, yeah. Also have a strength and conditioning coach back home who does me a great deal. Try to keep my weight low and getting off the, build my muscles and my stamina up. So that's how we do it. Not as much fun as you guys have, though.
Hey, I'm trying to make a comeback myself. Haven't had too much sparring yet. I've had about 4 rounds of sparring up here. I'm in Massachusetts. So
how old
are you? I'm 32. Making a comeback. Last time I lost officially was when I was at Virginia Military Institute back in 1998. And Tony and I were actually supposed to fight each other. Weighing around $185. Now I'm around $195, trying to get down to $175 to go pro sometime next year. I just want to do like 10 fights and see what happens.
It's been a while, huh?
Yeah, it's been quite a while. But,
good luck with that, huh?
Yeah, I've had some limited success, though.
He's keeping himself well preserved.
Yeah.
So we have guys, which I ended up not matching up in the national finals here in different brackets. And in the quarterfinals, I drew a guy who eventually was a 3-time national champion. It was the first, in fact, he won it that year for the first time. Now, I'm at 185 pounds. I'm standing at 5'8". Which I had been fighting 165 and 172 the previous year, but I moved up. The guy I stepped in the ring with was 6'7".
Yeah,
185 pounds. I mean, obviously he wasn't a bulky guy, but his arms probably could reach me when he was standing in his corner and I was standing in mine. you know, I was going to try to pull up the Rocky Balboa comeback and knock out Ivan Drago. And then Rich was trying to get to the semifinals, fighting the guy that I actually beat earlier in the year. And he starts looking ahead at the 6'7" guy, not focusing on the guy in the ring, and ended up losing his decision. And then the guy.
It's Michael Jordan, though, so I can say
that. Sure,
he won.
Yeah, he won.
He knocked out Michael Jordan in the third round. Then he came and he won the next 2 years over another friend of mine, who's actually French.
What's
up? He came from the Air Force Academy, which is where I spent my freshman year, actually. And they kicked me out because I couldn't pass calculus. So I got the best of three different schools, military schools. I went to Air Force for a year. I got their boxing training. Then I took it to Norwich University. I started my own boxing club and did the coaching for a little while. And then they sent me to Virginia Military Institute for a semester, and I trained under a Marine colonel down there named Gordon Calkins. And this guy sent us on 7-mile runs every Tuesday through the hills of Virginia. And I will always credit that with my success, because the first scrimmage I had was against a kid I later beat in the regionals to get to the nationals. And I just gassed out. I was in real bad shape. I've been doing a little more coaching and a little less boxing. So I got thrown right back into the mix, and I learned after that. I went 3-2 after that. And then one fight against Jordan was one of the losses, and then the other loss was against the guy we all love to hate. Tony and I both hate him for his fouling fighting, the guy from Penn State, Jesse Bond.
He was the version of John Ruiz in the amateurs. He was a clutcher, a holder. You know, no matter where he had, he had like 6 arms, he could clutch with each one of them. I beat him once early in the season because I just picked him. For being a guy that was 6'2", he came into the inside to fight me. But he wasn't touching me, he was just trying to clutch me. So I just tore his body apart. Then we fought the second round in his home arena.
He did something to me.
And I didn't catch him. I mean, it was still giving him the first round. He come the second, third round, I just tore his body to shreds. And what ended up happening was, you know, I put him down once in the third round, and one of the judges still gave him the third round. Because it was his home gym. Pretty much my coach, Peter, said the fight was over and goes, "Oh man, if my season's over, I just lost in the regionals. You can congratulate your guy for winning." And then they gave it to him. And I was just so disgusted, I walked out of the gym that night. And that hurt my knee going into the nationals. Because I wasn't supposed to be a national. My season was over, so I was just, you know, hanging out with some friends and everything. And got my knee all like twisted up. It was surgically repaired like a year and a half earlier. And then they're like, "Oh, well, if somebody dropped out, you've got the spot." And I'm like, "This is not gonna be any walk."
Lucky.
Hey, Rich, just in case you want to know, there's fights on Versus right now. Just turn them on. It's a little different person fighting. He's the new Ray Robinson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've covered him a few times.
Well, anyway, enough about us. Sean, why don't you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what are your ultimate goals in the sport, and what do you think about your division, you know, the competition out there with the titles?
Well, I think I have the same goals as any young up-and-coming pro fighter. I hope to hopefully one day I'll hold the world championship belt. And I've added to my goals from, you know, being in the gym with Pac-Man. I would love to hold a few of those world championship belts. But aside from that, I want to be remembered as one of the greatest fighters of all time, and that's about it.
And who's your toughest fight so far?
And my toughest fight?
Yep.
I would have to say my last fight was my toughest fight. Jerome Ellis was he was fast, and he has some pretty good moves. But, you know, I fought all the top amateurs on my way out of the amateur Olympic program. Dave Jacobs, I beat Danny, I beat the Olympian, Sean Estrada, I actually beat him twice, 2-0 against him, and also the 152 pounds Olympian. I beat you, Andre. I beat him once.
Yeah,
so,
oh yeah, you fight up here in my neck of the woods a lot. So.
Yeah. So I had a stellar amateur career, and I'm looking at the same professional career.
So we talked about watching the work in from Philadelphia last night, and he mentioned the Olympics. He's a highly touted amateur prospect, Danny Garcia. Did you just mention him also?
No, I didn't mention Danny Garcia.
Okay. What if we get him confused with the other guy that you just mentioned? Danny, he fought last night on versus won by knockout. And we've had him off with us before. I was going to ask you, aside from your guy like Max Pacquiao, who you had the opportunity to work with, who are some other fighters out there today that you'd like to watch and admire?
I've been in the ring with Kelly Pavlik. I've been in the ring with Chad Dawson, a few other pros, Andre Darrell. I've done a number of rounds with each of those guys. And I really admire Shane Mosley. I like his style.
Now, that must give you a huge advantage going into some of these fights where, you're fighting already against such high competition, high-level sparring. You're getting preparing for guys that really aren't near that level even yet. So what's that like? I mean, it's got to feel great having that connection.
Yeah, I mean, it's a confidence builder, and it also allows me to gauge where I am as a fighter, so.
And out of all those people that you've sparred with, who would you say was the number one, the guy that reached the artist or was the toughest to figure out?
I would say to figure out Pac-Man, but Andre Darrell is extremely talented as well. I'm looking forward to him bouncing back in his Super 6 tournament.
Yeah, that was a tough loss. And I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched parts of it, but he has a very unique style. It's hit or miss sometimes, so it was a very back and forth fight. It could have gone either way, but there's a lot of controversy in boxing lately with some of these decisions. But at the same time, like we've been talking about the last few weeks, the UFC is also having the same issues, if not worse. The last few big fights they've had, there's been some concerns with the scoring. So it's a problem that's all over combat sports, but. It was interesting to see at least one American get the win. Even though that was a controversial fight too, but Kessler just a basic European fighter. He does the 1-2s and the hands up all the time, and he just was not prepared for a flashy American fighter, I think. So it's an interesting tournament.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know if it's all the first session.
Well, I want to ask you a question. This is the debate Rich and I had a few weeks ago after the first card of the Super 6. Rich and I were debating on the fact that should Jermaine Taylor continue his boxing career. I was actually saying that I don't disrespect Jermaine, but I think that after his last fight where he was knocked out against Arthur Abraham, he was competitive during the fight, but the fact of the matter is, Kelly Pavlik knocked him out pretty viciously in 2007. In fact, I just did one of my preview predictions for that fight, and I picked Pavlik by knockout, and everybody laughed at me. I said, no, I said, Jermaine is getting too tentative out there. I said, Bernard Hopkins ruined him. I said, Bernard stunned him bad in that first fight, and he hurt him for the first time in his career. And I saw when Jermaine was playing smaller, light punching guys like Corey Spinks, it couldn't hurt him with a baseball bat, and he couldn't press the action, he was afraid. I said, he's gunshot now, and I said, it's Kelly Pavlik, the bitch, gunshot. And I mean, it's just even better as you've been in there with Kelly. And Kelly knocked him out. They had the rematch where Kelly beat him by decision. Then he had, a knockout loss to Paul Frotch in a fight that he was winning, and he got pounded pretty dead in the last round and knocked out. And then this fight where he was knocked out cold by Arthur Abraham. And I said, what concerns me is the guy is getting his brain concussed on a frequent basis now. I said, he's getting like almost like a soft chin where he just doesn't have you know, mentality of the fighter anymore. I mean, even against Frost, he had him down and hurt, and he let him escape. And I think for his personal safety, he should think about he just pulled out of the tournament and, you know, looking at another career.
Okay, and I know it's not your weight, but, you know, seeing as you have experience with Pacquiao, love to get your thoughts on what you think about the now looks to be solid Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather fight. Looks like they're saying March 13th, 2010.
Yeah, well, I think we all know how exciting the fight is going to be and how big it's going to be. But to be him in the ring with Manny, I know that he's going to do some things in the ring with Mayweather that no one has been able to do. And I think a lot of people are pulling for Pac-Man, and you just can't count him out. A lot of people think that Mayweather's defense is going to be too hard for Pac-Man, but I think that Pac-Man will figure it out. And it's going to make for a big and exciting fight. And it's going to be huge for
Bobo. Well, I'm going to pick Manny early. You know, I like Floyd's defensive style.
Early,
yeah. Not saying he's going to knock him out in the fight early. I'm saying early, in, like, before the fight is officially signed early. I'll pick Manny just because, you know, Floyd is a very defensive fighter. He does the shoulder roll thing, and that's his big secret. You know, but nobody presses the action when they figure out they can't hit him in the head, you know, without getting popped back once or twice. Because you know, that's what his specialty is. But Manny is the type of guy who will find a way through that and around that. And one thing I noticed in my last sparring session is actually getting punched in the shoulder when you're trying to block with it. It's one of the best things you can do to a person. Because, I mean, I got punched in the shoulder so hard, it was the hardest punch to get through in the match, you know. And he threw a lot of headshots trying to knock me out, but it broke a rib. But he threw a harder shot actually at my freaking shoulder. And it was like the thing that hurt the most the next 3 days, you know, in my rib, of course. But that's what I think Manny should do.
Someone asked me recently, like on that on Yahoo site where they just do like a lot of people ask me a lot of questions, and I was doing a boxing camp, and I said I consider myself a ring man and an expert. And someone says, how do you make a guy like Floyd Mayweather uncomfortable? He's always seemed so relaxed in the ring. And I said, well, here's how. If I was working the guy's corner, and now I'm going to say if it's any conventional right-handed fighter, and I would pretty much try to improve the game plan that Oscar De La Hoya was using that he stopped in mid-fight. Well, a lot of people, what they try to do is they try to catch Floyd with headshots because he's so fast, and they try to wait Floyd out, let him throw a punch, and then you're either going to block, duck, slip, and then counter. You're not going to work if Floyd's too fast. And it reminds me of when Muhammad Ali was fighting, you know, right after he had lost to Joe Frazier, and he was fighting Kenny Norton. And Big Fudge came in to train Norton. He goes, guys try to wait for Ali to punch and counter. He goes, he's too fast and his reflexes are too good. What you have to do is punch when Ali punches and jab when Ali jabs. How you stop the best jabber in boxing from jabbing is you catch it with the palm of your right hand, and when you see that shoulder flinch that his jab is coming, you fire your own. And you punch him in the mouth when he's throwing his. You do that 3 or 4 times, his best punch will not be thrown anymore because it's not landing for him, and he's going to hit the mouth every time he throws it. That's how.
I think in order to make Mayweather uncomfortable, and you know everyone says he looks so relaxed in the ring and all this and that, he's got to do exactly what Manny Pacman Pacquiao does, and that's throw a lot of punches, make you do what you don't want to do, which is fight, and that's what he's gonna make Mayweather do. And from still being in the ring with Manny, I think very highly of him, and I know what he's capable of. And I think he's capable of making Mayweather uncomfortable in the ring, and I think he's capable of beating Mayweather.
I think you're in a very profound point there. And when I was watching the De La Hoya Mayweather fight from a couple of years ago,
and someone asked me, that was the first preview prediction article I wrote. I called it wrong because I picked Dale Hoyer to win by an eight-round stoppage. But the first eight rounds, I called almost to a T. And I said, what Oscar's going to do to have success against Floyd, and I said, he was working with Freddie Roach. I said, and Freddie Roach is going to point this out to him. You can't really try to punch Floyd in the head a lot because it's not going to land. Three times worked out, and you're not going to be as fast as Floyd, so you can't, like, flurry with him. But what you have to do is back him up, and by doing that, he's using the jab, and actually, and just like Rich was saying, throwing it to the point of Mayweather's shoulders. Hit him in the torso, hit him in the body, because that body's not going to move. And I was saying, it's just a little bit of the old Rocky Marciano technique, where if you can't get a clean shot in, just beat the torso, beat the body. Just put your claw on that man's flesh, because even if it's not a quote-unquote scoring punch, like a punch that lands to the face, or the solar plexus, or the rib cage, you know what, if it lands on your body, and you'll know that, you know that you're being in the ring. If you were a boxing, and I might throw 20 punches, and none of them are scoring punches, they're all landing on your arms, they still hurt.
Okay, my dad saw me that when we first had decided to turn pro. He told me, you know, a lot of guys are going to cover them in a hole and try to grab you. But as long as you're punching, you know, it may not have an effect as soon as you punch them over the rounds. Those punches are going to have on his course to keep on breaking the guy down. And Pac-Man has the ability to do that. He's going to throw so many punches, and he's going to make Mayweather work. And I think, you know,
right.
It's so rare that he's ever been.
Big thing about Manny.
No one's ever made him do that. Yeah, no one's ever made him do that.
Big thing about Manny is that he has, like, a whole people supporting him, a whole country. And what does Floyd have? Floyd has the people that he's given money to in his small little fan base here in the United States. Most people love to hate him, as far as I can see.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they don't like to watch him fight at the same time.
Floyd, you can't just put pressure on him. You have to put effective pressure. If Ricky Hatton tried to pressure on him, hold him long, that doesn't work. You have to come in there. You can't be just coming in wide open with your hands wide open. You got to come there. But what I like about Manny, you know, I'm like, I do know this because you've been in the ring with him. He's done two and three head feints. Like, he'll head feint you five or six times before he throws his punch. Then next thing you know, he's throwing six punches. So it's like, when's it coming? Is it coming on the first, second, third, fifth, or sixth bob?
Right.
And then yeah,
I like what you said about effective pressure. And the thing about Manny is he throws four or five punch combinations, but being in the ring with him, I know that he has intentions on every punch. He doesn't just throw the throw. He knows where he wants those punches to go. And, you know, he throws his punches in a lot of directions.
All right, one thing actually that I've tried to, you know, hone into my own game from watching Manny is, you know, that jab or, you know, right hand to the body and then, you know, another punch to the head, you know. He'll change levels as well as using the speed very well. And, you know, the last time I was hitting the bag at the gym, my trainer even told me, you know, the bag's not going to go home and complain about how much it hurts. You know, if you hurt your hand, it's trying to hurt the bag. You know, it's screw you up, not the bag. So, you know, just work on your speed. And then I watched the Pacquiao fight, and I noticed just the other day, if you actually consciously try to maximize your speed and power ratio, you're trying to land, you know, a shot to the body to the head, like let's say a double right hook, you go to the body and the head, you'll notice that the faster you try to throw that shot, the harder the second one is going to be. You know, you tap the first one, and then that second one to the head, if you're going body head, usually it comes in like even harder. And, you know, the faster you go, the harder it seems like you're hitting when you're working on your speed and you're consciously trying to maximize the power with each punch. And I think Pacquiao is one of the best fighters in doing that in history. I mean, if you look back, at especially his last few fights, moving up with such big weight differences, to be able to match those guys, not only match them, but knock a guy out like Cotto, it just shows you how well he's been able to master that technique. And a lot of people compare him to Bruce Lee, because he has the physique of Bruce Lee. But he also has the speed. People just, they can't appreciate it. They're really watching it in slow motion. You watch it a few times. Like, the second time I watched it, I noticed that thing in the fourth round. I mean, That was huge. I think that was really the turning point in the fight, because he just basically sent Cotto a physical and a mental message that you can't hang with me.
Yes.
You know, that speed is huge. You saw it, obviously with Oscar De La Hoya, but Oscar is a little older fighter, and you kind of expect him to be slower. Whereas Cotto, everybody thought he was going to, punish me into the body, maybe, be the hardest puncher Manny ever faced, but he just didn't have the speed and the power makeup that Manny had. I think there's very few people in boxing today that come close to that kind of that mix. I think, actually, I've said it a bunch of times, Shane Mosley is probably the only one that comes to mind. It's based on his last fight against Margarito, anyway. He's finally got that power behind the speed. He used to just have the speed, but now he's got the power, too. And we'll see what he does with it. He's got a big fight against Berto. I don't know if you've got a thought on that one.
A little bit, too. Making it all come together as one.
Yeah, it's like a tough dynamic, but, it makes a huge difference. If you think about it with Manny, that whole fight, really, he didn't press the action for a full 3 minutes in any round. He always fought in these spurts, but they were such intense spurts. You saw it in sparring, obviously, where, you might be thinking you're doing pretty good, and then he comes out with 6 or 7 punches that totally change the round, puts you on the defensive. And that's what he's best at, I think. I don't think anybody can get around him. The way he is now, maybe he might slack off in the future, get a little older in a few years, but right now he's definitely in his prime. I just think people don't appreciate how good he is.
Enjoyable for families that once were.
Right. Yeah, actually, there's rumors that it might even be held at Cowboy Stadium, the new Cowboy Stadium.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty sick.
That would. I hate the Cowboys, but that's still kind of cool.
As long as there's no Juan Diaz hometown cooking.
Well, as long as Juan Diaz ain't in the white, we didn't have the white.
Speaking of which, you know, the last like 3 or 4 weeks, I've been meaning to mention that that rematch has been signed. I don't know if you guys heard about that. But Malik Naji versus Diaz has been signed officially.
Yes, yeah, maybe it's Chicago,
yeah, neutral territory.
Sure, I'll be checking that out.
Yeah, all right, well, Sean, do you have any final thoughts or anybody you want to give a shout-out to or anything like that?
No, just you guys, man. This was fun. This was definitely fun. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
It's a short time before you get on the air this time. You know, always love to have you back sometime. You know, when you have bigger and better things are on the tab. And, you know, maybe before the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, maybe we'll get in and, you know, maybe we'll do a little round table talking about, you know, our previews and predictions and what's going to happen and where we see it going.
Hey, that sounds great.
Yeah, we could have you as an expert panelist for sure on that, on any particular topic.
I would love that.
And we're trying to get a hold of all the boxers before they get famous. So when they do become famous, you know, they'll take us with
them. Sorry, you got a relationship with them, huh?
So, no, you're going to be one of them. Being undefeated in this day and age in boxing is very tough, so we definitely support you. Wish you luck with keeping that going. Need it. You got the skill, and obviously, if you can hang with Manny Pacquiao, you can hang with just about anybody in the sport. So, we'll be watching, that's for sure.
Thanks. Hey, you guys have a great night.
You too.
You too. Thanks. All right, Sean.
Alrighty, so now.
Hi, Rick.
Hello?
Hello?
Tony?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, what's that?
I just said hi.
Oh, I was like, what? Who is this person? I thought we had another hijacked call. I said, I love you, Steve.
No, I mean, we don't do call-ins anymore.
I know.
As a matter of fact, we kept trying to call us in and talk bullshit.
The Wolfinator.
Yeah, the Wolfinator. I was like, what, just please hang up on this asshole?
Yeah, that was tough. Actually, they now have, I don't know if I sent you, I know I've been sending you a lot of shit. And obviously, you're on vacation, so you're ready to get a lot of it. But I sent you something, or maybe I didn't send it to you, but there's a site called livestream.com, and they have this thing called Procaster that's completely free. And, you know, there's no monthly fee or anything like that unless you want, like, extra promotional stuff. But you can go back to a chat/video broadcast again with that integrated. Now that we also have fightradio.info, which I forgot to mention.
Yeah, what is that? I'm going to put the purpose in. I had all the emails when I came home. I must get shit from Citibank every day. The motions even more. I tell them, don't send me any more of this shit.
Well, we got fightradio.info online now, and that's basically just going to be like a resource site for people to go to and find out, you know, what radio shows are there for what combat sports, from boxing to mixed martial arts to wrestling, and even grappling, all that stuff. And what I'm going to do is, you know, each site that I list there, I'm going to contact their people and, you know, request a listing on their site to kind of get it going. But I've done like different thing with that site, and I don't have any Google ads on there. I have all new affiliate ads with the companies that I've researched and looked at, so we'll see if that makes a dent. I don't know, but I think it should be pretty popular, you know. It's with that, they used that Intuit business site software. I saw it on TV. It's all cookie cutter software, and it's pretty easy to work with, so I might do something else with that. But it was pretty easy to do. I did it over the weekend. I had some free time over the Thanksgiving weekend because it looked like nobody was paying attention to any any sort of combat sports news reporting during the weekend. I had like maybe 3 emails a day to put up on the blog. So that was kind of good to get a break. But, as far as the upcoming combat sports events, we got the big Ultimate Fighter finale going on this weekend. We have UFC 107 coming up. That's going to be Kenny Florian versus Clay Guida, which when we talked to Joe Lazon, I think, we talked to last, like...
That's my first favorite fighter.
Yeah. And when we talked to him, we mentioned him fighting Clay Guida. We talked about that before, I know, that matchup, but Clay Guida is a great fighter to watch. He's just in-your-face crazy. He's got the long hair. He actually didn't get to be in the UFC game because he wouldn't cut his hair. But just an interesting guy all around. He's going to be fighting another hometown guy for me around here, Kenny Florian, who just had a real bad loss against BJ Penn. So now...
There and won a fight. I forget who it was. It was UFC 77. He won.
Now he's fighting Matt Beach, another undefeated guy. Edgar is 10-1, Beach is 11-0, and at 155. Jones versus Matrione. We have Daryl Schoonover, a.k.a. Titties, on the show. He's fighting James McSweeney, the guy who fought a little too early before he was supposed to fight. John Mattson, another guy from the show, versus Justin Wren. Brian Stan, your good buddy that you're supposed to be getting on the show. 7-2 versus Rodney Wallace. Show Nuff the Master, Rodney Wallace. That's his nickname. Show Nuff the Master. Brian, All-American Stan. That's a better nickname. But John Howard, another good buddy of ours we had on the show not too long ago. He's also fighting versus Dennis Hallman. Coming off a big win against the Chainsaw. Charles something, I forget the last name right now, escaping me. But he just fought a real tough fight against a real gangly guy with a lot of jiu-jitsu skills and did really well for himself. Again, with this decision there, he's fighting Dennis Hallman. He has a very incredible MMA record. Get this, he is 64-12-2 with one no contest. And that's probably why they call him the Superman. 64 wins in MMA, that is tough to come by. I would think there's not too many other people with anything close to that. He looks young, so that's kind of surprising. Anyway, the last one on the card is Mark Bocek versus Joe Bramer. And newsflash for you in boxing. Manny Pacquiao trainer Freddie Roach has been sued for assault. Have you heard this?
Wow.
Yeah. Freddie has been charged with pushing around a guy named Alex Vidal, a boxing writer. Yes. He wrote some kind of report on Roach being sick and missing Concepcion's last workout. I don't know. I guess it's unavailable online, the actual article that he wrote. But Roach suffers from Parkinson's disease, obviously, and he still challenged Vidal, claiming he wasn't sick and that he only went to a clinic. Vidal said he apologized and said he was quoting a statement from someone else, from Concepcion's manager. And Roach allegedly went on a tirade, pushing Vidal roughly in the shoulder and yelled, "Next time you write about it, I will kill you." So Vidal is suing for unspecified damages. That whole Freddie Roach camp is good for the drama with that Conks guy and the Pacquiao getting in the fist fight.
And it's great with the ball the mail was.
Oh yeah, of course. And Mosley is now speaking out saying about between himself and Pacquiao is the best thing for boxing. Boxing news flash. My good buddy Ryan Sartagalia. I already sent him an email. He just interviewed Mosley. So I just sent him an email saying, you know, we'd love to have you on again and be a guest host and bring Mosley with you. Definitely like to talk to you. But what do we got for upcoming boxing, Mr. Rain Man?
Well, let's see. I'm sorry, I'm too often here. Mr. Rain Man have a pet, but we got. We'll have it this weekend on HBO Saturday night with your boy, the Punisher.
Williams.
Yeah, like that Atlantic City. Was this who he was supposed to fight on? Tony Pavlik, which obviously thought so. But here's what we got on the card. We got a couple of interesting fights. We got Paul the Punisher Williams, who is universally recognized as the most avoided boxer in the world. He is fighting Sergio Martinez from originally from Argentina, who is recognized as the second most avoided boxer in the world. Martinez is 44-1 with two draws, 24 knockouts. His only loss was a TKO back to Antonio Margarito back almost 10 years ago. In that fight, he had a draw with Kermit Cintron that a lot of people thought he got ripped off in. We got Paul the Punisher Williams. He is 37-1, 27 knockouts. The last fight was in April. faced with Winky Wright over 12 rounds, with a unanimous decision. Also on the card, we got Jonathan Charles Witherspoon, 26-1, 18 knockouts. He's fighting a former title challenger, Tony the Tiger Thompson, 32-2 with 20 knockouts. And then we got the returning Chris Areola. He said basically, after he lost to Klitschko about 2.5 months ago, he said, get me in the ring as soon as possible. And so he was done nothing for his last fight. He lost to recently Klitschko, the older brother, a 10th round stoppage in late September. And he's now 27-1 with 24 knockouts. And he's fighting a very tough and capable Brian Minto, Brian the Beast Minto, who is 34-2 with 21 knockouts. And look at what he's lost. He lost to former world title challenger Tony Tubbs in the book position back about 5 years ago. That's a lot. Then he lost to a very tough Zoran Krasniqi, who was unanimous decision over in Germany. So, very tough fight for Chris Areola. It ought to be a slugfest. Because Minto comes to fight and Areola goes no other way. We have Carlos Quintana on the card, who has his only defeat on Paul Williams' record, a decision a few years ago, which Williams avenged. He's 26-2 with 20 knockouts. Also has a stoppage lead loss to Miguel Cotto on there. And he's fighting Jesse Feliciano. This is a fight Quintana should win. Feliciano lost his last two fights via stoppage. And he is 15-7. Three draws, he has 9 knockouts, and out of the 7 losses, he's been stopped 5 times, including the last 2 fights.
That's not good.
No, not if you're going to be fighting the guy like Carlos Quintana, who's, you know, a pretty damn good fighter.
Well, they actually have a lot of Friday night fights, too, there, where you're mentioning the box rank, and it's too bad that ESPN isn't doing their Friday night fights right now, because they got a lot of candidates.
They got a lot of stuff going on. They got basketball, they got college basketball, they got college football.
Look at that. There's boxing cover.
Well, you know, that's what I say, Rich. But they got to put exciting sports on, like table tennis and poker.
Well, over in the United Kingdom, they got it on TV and on the Sky Network. We have the prize fighter matchups going on there. 3x3 light welterweight fights. Ted Bamme takes on Gavin. Bamme is 26-5, Reese is 28-1, Bamme's got 13 knockouts, Reese has 14, then we have Colin Lyons, 31-6, with 12 knockouts, versus David Barnes, 24-1, with one draw and 11 knockouts, Young Muttley, 26-4, with 13 knockouts, versus Barry Jones, 16-3, with 7 knockouts, and Michael Grant, 12-0, with 1 knockout, and Jason Crook, 25-12 knockouts. And this is kind of like the Super 6 tourney, except you got 8 fighters. It's called prize fight. They just did the heavyweights. We've been covering it pretty heavy on our site because they basically saturate us with emails on every guy in the tournament every time there is one. So we got a lot of stuff on the blog about that, all those matchups and the individuals involved. If you're online, and I meant to mention this, I didn't mention this earlier, but might as well talk about it now while we're winding things up here, but I just had the pleasure of listening to the Eddie Goldman No Holds Barred show last week, and I don't know if you know a lot about Eddie Goldman, but he does some boxing coverage, mostly, you know, mixed martial arts, wrestling, that kind of stuff, but he is actually a member of the Boxing Writers Association.
Yeah.
But they suspended him for a year.
Wow.
And guess what they suspended him for?
For something?
No. He was telling people about ways to watch TV online free and catch these fights and, you know, mixed martial arts, combat, and boxing as well on these sites. And one of them I sent to you this past week. It's called MyP2P. And you can basically get almost any channel in the world on that station. And it's all in online. And there's also MMA TV, where I get all my good videos. And there's a Russian YouTube. I mean, there's so many different places where there's ways to get around the copyrights and watch fights for free. Either in they're happening or after they're happening. And this is interesting because, you know, they're making a big statement, boxing is, by going after a guy in the media like that and suspending him from the Writers Association for a year. I mean, he's not all bent out of shape or anything. He was actually not funny. I wish I had the clip. I'm going to play it next week. But he goes off about it and talks about, you know, who exactly decided his fate there. And, you know how it's really no big deal that he's banned. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that they would go to that one as a link. It's just because he's telling people about these sites. But Sky TV is one of those ones that you can get on there. So if you go to myp2p.com, you'll be able to watch that fight and any other fight you see on YouTube, pretty much, with the TV listings, usually right under the tickets and the number, and then usually there's a television line, it's on TV, and it'll tell you what station and where in the world, and you can get it through some online channel, almost guaranteed. But I didn't tell you that, because I don't want to get suspended for a year from an organization that we belong to. Are you a member of the Boxing Writers Association, Tony?
I've heard of it. I've never been on the site or anything.
No, I don't know. That's like one of those things I've always never wanted to be involved in. Like, you know, some organization that's just, you know, a matter of, you know, getting extra recognition or, you know, being a member of the official club that covers boxing. I'd rather be unofficial any day of the week than any ties to any official organization.
And I tell a lot of people, which I had the opportunity to live a press day I really still wouldn't be able to take it down anyway. But there's other times that I've been in Detroit, and people say, you know what, you can get these press days, you can sit right up on the inside, you can do all this, you can do all that. And I said, when I get on the phone, like if I go to the Blue Horizon or the New York Opera or anywhere else, I'll ask him, and I'll say, listen, I'm probably cooking. All I want to just be able to bring my camera in. That's all I need. And then I used to play this in the video, my matches with that. So I like to go to fight and not to feel like I'm working. Like, I'll bring my paper, I'll write my article, you know, I'll do all that, but I want to feel like I'm going to enjoy a fight. You know, I want, like, for a guy like Roger Fataga playing. He's a good friend of mine. I want to yell on the screen, Chuck Fataga or any of these guys. Like, speaking of Roger Fataga, I just got news the other day that he scored another huge fight after his close fight with Juan Manuel Lopez. What they're doing now is because the whole idea here was so Lopez looked great against Fataga, and Yuri Lopez Gamboa looked great in that fight, which he did. And then now what they're doing is they're putting Fataga in there with Yuri Lopez Gamboa. And now it's like, if Gamboa feels more pressure against Fataga than Lopez did, then it's more of like a build up for their fight. And when I told my dad about the USB, Gamboa is really fast. He's going to be tough for Rodgers. I'm like, yeah, Dad, he is. He's much faster than Rodgers is. But he's also a very open and aggressive fighter. And he's the type of guy that's been hit with counters. And in his brief career, he's taken the canvas like 6 or 7 times. I said, once again, Rodgers is going to be a big underdog, but he's one of those guys that he gets you with one punch, and it's over. And he's got the power that he can maybe do some damage to a wide open Yuri Lopez Gamboa.
That's going to be a good fight, that's for sure. Anyway, we've got to run down the rest of this schedule pretty quickly here. We've got about 5 minutes. Before we go to Philly for the Blue Horizon card, I wanted to mention one female fight going on in Albuquerque. Holly Holm, who is 25-1 at welterweight, 3 draws and 7 knockouts, is fighting Melissa Hernandez, who is 11-1, 2 draws, 4 knockouts for the WIBA, Women's International Boxing Association, welterweight title. That's going on Friday. And then also we have this big Blue Horizon card with Steve Upshur Chambers, 20-1 with 1 draw and 6 knockouts versus Doel Carrasquillo, I don't know if you pronounce that right, but he's 12-12.
Carrasquillo is a very tough fighter, but Upshur Chambers is very good. I've talked to Steve on a number of occasions, and he's a really tough kid. He's a southpaw. He's got a fast hand. Maybe not a southpaw. I don't know, but I see Steve. He's the younger brother of Eddie Chambers. He's playing Vladimir Klitschko. And he's one of the players who played very impressively. So we'll see how he does against the spoiler, who is pretty much the guy who used to go to the place, but he's always tough. He's always in there.
We also have a pretty big fight in Quebec, Canada, this Saturday between Joaquin Alcine, who's 31-1 with 19 knockouts, and Christophe Canclo, who's 40-2 with 25 knockouts. And that is for the WBO Intercontinental Light Middleweight title. And that should be a pretty good fight. Troy Ross is 22-1 with 15 knockouts, is also fighting on that card. Cruiserweight, he's fighting Daniel Bispo, who's 21-11 with 15 knockouts. And a whole bunch of other pretty decent fights. Nothing that really jumps out. But we gotta go to Germany for a cruiserweight matchup between Marco Huck, 26-1, 20 knockouts, versus Ola Afolabi, who's 14-1 with 3 draws. Six knockouts. It's going to be on Saturday in Germany. It's going to be on Germany ARD television. You can probably get it on BTV. And anyway, there's also going to be a really co-main event. It's like between Dominic Bridge, 16-0 with 5 knockouts, and Cliver Argent Alves, 7-2 with 6 knockouts. Another fight is actually more interesting. They have Alexander Povetkin, 17-0 with 12 knockouts in heavyweight, versus Leo Nolan, who's 27-1 with 10 knockouts. So that'll be a good test for Povetkin. Let's see what else we got there. Yeah, over in the United Kingdom, we have a couple belts on the line. The Commonwealth, British Empire featherweight title, and the WBO Intercontinental Lightweight title. The lightweight fight is Kevin Mitchell, 29-0 with 22 knockouts, versus Bradis Prescott, 21-1 with 18 knockouts.
Prescott has the knockout over Amir Khan.
Right. The other fight, the featherweights, John Simpson, 20-6 with 8 knockouts, versus Stevie Bell, 18-1 with 5 knockouts. Amir Khan is also on the card, fighting Dimitri Salida. I don't know why that's not listed at the top. It's probably going to be the main event. But maybe Prescott's more famous because he's not coming out. Also, Alex Arthur versus Nigel Wright is going to be on that card. And Enzo Macronelli is back in action.
29.
I thought so too, but he's a cruiserweight now, coming back in a 6x3 match. I got some Christian Jackson. Definitely a comeback type of fight. See what happens. But Paul Williams, as you said, is fighting out. There was one fight that was canceled. We did a brief little snippet on the blog about it. But Paul Williams and Wiki Wright had been thrown around. Now Wiki Wright has just canceled his fights in Puerto Rico that he had scheduled.
Not Paul Williams and Wiki Wright was out, but I know Wiki Wright was going to be on somebody else.
Oh, wait, Wiki Wright
in April.
Oh, yeah. It must have been like his comeback point after that. Okay, so that's about it. Just about out of time anyway. 20 seconds. Any final thoughts there, Tony?
One second. This is Tornado logging out, and I'll talk to you all next week.
Adios, folks. Good show.
Uh-huh. Yeah.